You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where screw Daniel T. Richards. I'm your host, Justin M. Wozdeski, the hopeful romantic, and I retroactively or proactively denounce anything anyone has ever said and ever will say on this show, especially what I just said about screw you, Daniel T. Richards. I don't mean that. I love our host emeritus, but I do think it's funny that now, officially, the most downloaded episode ever is not, according to Podbean, although I've heard Podbean's statistics aren't particularly reliable, but I'm going to say they're reliable because the most downloaded episode is no longer our Batman versus Superman analysis. It is now the Bathroom Pass edition, which, according to Podbean, had 967 downloads in the first week. Now, I think it considers a download a stream, because anytime any app streams the episode, it has to download it from the Podbean server. So I think that's why it considers it downloads. So the thing we don't know is how long people are listening to the episode for. It is entirely possible that people are clicking for some reason. I guess they find the title interesting or something of that nature. I mean, Witnessing the Forest. This episode is called the DEI but Jumbled Edition. I will pat myself on the back. That's a pretty good name, especially when you see what story that is referring to. It's all pretty well organized. But then they could hear me talk and be like, screw this guy, 100%. And tune out immediately. So I don't know. Definitely not the use of the drops that's making them tune out, because that was a perfect use of the drop by my co-host, who I'm going to bring in now. Joining me this trip from his corner office, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Yeah, it's, you know, listeners are going up every episode this season so far, right? So,
yeah.
We got to continue this trend for the year. Welcome to the new Midsiders.
Yeah, that's all you. You should welcome them, because it's not me. I'm not doing anything different. I'm just putting together an outline and then talking like an idiot off the top of my head. So thank you. But I got to ask you, do you feel any more pressure with what you're going to say and what we're going to talk about now that we have 3,000 times the audience we had 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, no, not really. I've already been canceled once. Why not? How much worse can it get? I guess is really what it comes down to.
That is true. You are evidence that it is impossible. The only way to be uncancelable is to believe you're uncancelable. You are evidence of that.
Yep. I'm going to manifest it into reality. Yep. That's very true.
What else is going on with you?
Well, geez, it's been a roller coaster week. So Justin, I had someone who I was working with, and they took something that should have been seen as, oh, they're going to grow and work with me, and they turned it into they're taking something away from me, and it was just really awkward. I don't want to go into details, but
your virginity? They took your virginity?
No, it was in the work context. Like, have you ever had a situation like that where, you know, something happened, like, you know, your manager makes some decision and it's like, oh, I want to make this better for you. And they completely take it as the opposite, that you're trying to make things worse for me. It was just so hard to deal with, because you're like trying to explain to someone, no, this is great. This is a great chance to, you know, get more training, get more opportunity. And instead they're like, you're taking this away from me. It was very, very awkward.
Yeah, I mean, I find that that's people who feel like they need power, right?
Like, yeah.
I only want more power if it helps me do my job better. I don't want more power if it doesn't help me do my job better, because fuck, that's a lot of responsibility, man. And the more power you have, the more problems you have to deal with and the more people you have to deal with. And like, the easiest way to do my job is to have people stay out of my way. So it's like a paradox, right? It's a catch 22. Yeah. The more power you get, the harder it is to do your job, but you got to find that equilibrium. Where's the right amount of power where you deal with the least amount of people to do your job properly? However, there are some people who they want all the power, and the way they deal with the people is to micromanage them. And that's kind of sounds like what you're dealing with right now, where you try and take some of the power away, not because you want the power, but just because it would make everyone's job easier. But they see it as a threat because you're making them less important.
Yeah. 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 And it's hard because, you know, I try to think, you know, we all know the fallacy you usually make is you try to think how you would react to things and not how the other person would react to things. Right. And I try to think back and I'm like, I had no evidence that this would have been the reaction. Right. Like, it took everyone by surprise that this was the reaction, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the toughest situation. You know, I'm sort of glad I learned it, because now I can adjust about this individual, right? I can say, oh, okay, I have to be careful. You know, I have to be, you know, this person is sensitive in this way that I didn't realize. But it's still really, really tough, right? It changed from like that. Instead of focusing on the opportunities, now I have to focus on this, you know, rebuilding the relationship issue. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I damaged the relationship, the professional relationship inadvertently.
Yeah. I understand completely, and I hope for your sake this person doesn't become unpredictable, because the worst is people
that's the hardest. Yeah.
You never know how they're going to react. So you adjust, right? So say you adjust now, and then you do something different, and then they react a different way. And you're like, what am I going to fucking do now? Like, everything I do, it's a different reaction.
Yeah, that's very true. Very true.
And that's kind of the chaos of the culture we're living in right now, is especially as we talked about, like, are we on the downward of peak woke? I think we're seeing a lot of that this week. I think a lot of interesting stuff happened that's kind of like, is this happening? What the hell is going on? Let's get into it in Life on the Midside. Take a good look around. Does life really suck? Are we just complaining? I hope that this mic is on. Because I'm on. As always, if you'd like to support the show, you can do so through Patreon or Locals. That means you too, new people. If you've listened this far in the episode, you clearly do not think I'm that annoying, or you enjoy how much of a train wreck this is, because that's the thing. If you donate, you can tell us why you're donating. You want more of a train wreck? I'll sell out. I'll be more of a train wreck on purpose. Let us know. Go to themidside.com/Patreon or themidside.com/Locals. Go there. Patreon is per episode. Locals is per month. We accept any and all support, including, perhaps most of all, affirmations. And I can't speak to William, but I'm pop punk. I'm not punk. I'm willing to sell out. First bit of farce is something you shared with me, William. Now, I will openly admit, I did not watch the video. So this was like a short, brief write-up in the New York Times, and then there was a video accompanying it. I will describe it as, without even having watched it, a propaganda video based on the description.
Yeah.
What I did is I pulled out one paragraph here. I want to read it, and I want to explain to you the manipulative technique in here, okay? This is an article titled, "It Turns Out the, quote, Deep State is Actually Kind of Awesome." Which, by the way, is the New York Times trying to write like a Gen Zer, but they're actually writing like, crap, who's the actor in that meme? How are you doing, fellow kids? With the skateboard, you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Who's the actor? Steve Buscemi. Is this Steve Buscemi in that meme writing this headline? Because this is how a kid might have talked in the 90s, right? It turns out the deep state is actually kind of awesome. But a Gen Zer is going to see this and be like, what? Anyway, here's the paragraph. When we hear deep state, instead of recoiling, we should rally. We should think about the workers otherwise known as our public servants. Okay, so before I even continue, William, you see how they're immediately pivoting here?
Yeah.
So they're immediately trying to set the premise as a pro-government premise. Immediately, they want you to say, oh, there's nothing wrong with large government. Large government is a good thing. But then they take it a step further. We should think about the workers, otherwise known as our public, what's the key word here? Servants.
Mm-hmm.
The everyday what? Superheroes who wake up ready to dedicate their careers and their lives to doing what? Serving us. These are the Americans we employ. Even though their work is often invisible, it makes our lives better. So these are the two premises here that they're trying to use to prop up the idea that big government is a good thing. First, that it employs people who all they want to do is serve other people.
Fact checked, false. As someone who used to work for the government, and I'm sure you had this experience as well, there's a grain of truth here. There are people who try to make a difference. There are people who work hard and are mission focused. I was one of those people, and especially when I on my team, there were a little bit higher percentage than normal. But Justin, would you say the percentage is 50% of those kind of hard workers? 30%? 20%? 2%? Which one's closer?
I mean, I don't even know if you can get an accurate percentage, because at least my experience at Caltrans when I was in California was the system is not set up to enable that. And what I mean is, I was certainly one of those people who, you know, as a public information officer, I was trying to make the information and the communication as available and comprehensible, understandable for the general public. However,
en español.
Well, I didn't do that because I'm racist, but I wasn't able to because the system was simply set up to go as slow as possible. Now, this goes into a more Randian interpretation of people who want bigger government believe they can't survive on their own. So there are people who go in to work for the government as a way to essentially get welfare, right? It's a free paycheck. So even though I was trying to do good things, William, it was the least stress I've ever had in a job. And a lot of the time was really just hanging out with people because I got the stuff I needed to get done. And then there was nothing else to do. So I want to say like maybe 10% of people, but can you even get an accurate read because of the way the system is set up to go at a glacial pace?
Yeah, I think, there are certain parts, usually the closer you are to a legitimate part of government, the faster and more mission focused, the more this would be true. But Justin, isn't this not what people say when they're talking about the deep state? Isn't their invisibility the exact problem, right? The people making these decisions that are completely unaccountable and
right.
And completely invisible to you as the person, right? Like as the American citizen we're supposed to appreciate in them, right? This
right.
is, you know...
Well, it's hand-waving it away because it's saying the invisible work is for you, so you need to trust it's for you.
Yeah. And, yeah, I think this is just terrible, insidious propaganda from the New York Times. Like, how do you even, like, you have to wonder, what is this responding to? Is it responding to Trump? Is this, I haven't been following, you know, Trump's latest shenanigans. Justin, this last couple of weeks, I've realized how, you know, with the long break, how out of touch I am on some of the things that would be considered, quote unquote, mainstream. Whereas on the other hand, like, I've been going down rabbit holes just sort of my interest, right?
Yes.
So I can tell you more about how the Rocky Mountains were formed right now than I can about whatever Trump has been saying lately.
Right. Well, I don't think it's particularly about anything Trump has said specifically lately. I think it's part of the larger machine, the deep state machine, to keep Trump out of office because they feel like their jobs are threatened. Apparently, I think this was said in the brief write-up, Trump has some sort of proposal about slashing the size of government tremendously. I think he probably got that from the Argentinian president.
Oh, dude. Didn't he... If we could even do a quarter of what he did, slashing things, then...
So I think Trump
Can you imagine the economic growth that would happen if that was actually accomplished?
Yes. So that's what I think Trump is sort of dangling in front of his supporters in the same sense that he dangled the build that wall that never actually happened. Remember how controversial that was and then it never actually happened?
Right,
and then I think he's doing the same thing here. He's seeing how successful that Argentinian president was.
It makes you wonder, you know, everyone, we've had the discussion before, 4D chess or just Trump being Trump. You know, he made all this build the wall talk. He pretended to do it. Then Biden comes in and they have to do the whatever the opposite of Trump was, right? So then they're just like, yeah, we're just going to start flying them all around the country. And now we're in the situation we're in now where there's like, isn't there like more immigrants now, like southern border immigrants in New York City than there are in the border towns in Texas? and like, is this 4D chess or just Trump being Trump?
Well, and that's the thing, right? Like, as much as I dislike the guy and he's turned me off to voting forever now, right? Ever since that first election versus Hillary, I was like, I'm done voting. This is a joke, right? Like, I'm no longer going to accept the South Park argument of giant douche versus turd sandwich. Like, I'm not going to pick if those are the choices, right? I mean, we've moved beyond giant douche versus turd sandwich. You know, I don't even know what the metaphor we would use nowadays is. However, this conversation is being had now. And that's got to be a victory on some level that the New York Times feels threatened enough and the deep state feels threatened enough. And I never would have used that metaphor, right? I would have just talked about like the government machine.
Yeah,
the government machine feels, the bureaucracy feels threatened enough that they have to defend themselves. So, I mean, take the positives where you can get them, right?
Yeah, true. Very true.
And I think that leads into our next sort of ridiculous story that it's kind of like, one of these other things where, you know, when we had it in our group text, host emeritus Daniel mentioned how, like, this is a good outcome, but for a bad reason, right? And this is the same thing here. So the state of Washington, its Supreme Court has ruled that the bar exam is no longer needed for people to practice law in their state. So here's a little bit of background on the court order. After more than 3 years of extensive study, bringing together data and research with testimony from scholars and experts, the task force came to two important findings. The traditional bar exam disproportionately and unnecessarily blocks marginalized groups from entering the practice of law, and the traditional bar exam is at best minimally effective for ensuring competent lawyers. The main objective of the court's admissions rules is public protection, with recommendations focusing lawyer admission standards on real-world practice and skills while reducing historical barriers in the profession. And then it goes into a bunch of changes the court is going to implement according to this ruling. I don't know if we need to specifically go into the nitty-gritty of it, William, because what stands out to me here is saying the traditional bar exam disproportionately and unnecessarily blocks marginalized groups from entering the practice of law, and the traditional bar exam is at best minimally effective for ensuring competent lawyers. I love how they had to do a study to know what anyone from a small government perspective, all the way from minarchist to traditional Republicans, have argued for years. That the entire point of this licensure by the government, and this folds into the deep state point, is to keep people out, not to make the profession better.
Yeah, Justin, I think you're right. This, we've talked about before how minimum wage laws and other things like this were originally instituted to keep poor, cheap black labor out of the market. And this is the same thing with lawyers, right? This is to keep now currently mostly lawyers from other states or other countries even coming in and taking up those positions, right? So in a way it's sort of like half right, but of course they couch it in all the marginalized group sort of Marxist language, right? Which is what makes it a bad decision. I don't know. It's unfortunate that they...
Well,
that
it makes it a good decision for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a kernel of truth here, right? Like, yes, this does, you know, quote-unquote marginalize people, but that's not the way to think about it. The way to think about it is this is a guild that keeps cheaper, otherwise exchangeable. Like, this is the thing no one wants to talk about. What I mean by that is it's interchangeable, right? It's like, it doesn't matter if your lawyer graduated from Harvard or from Lansing Community College for a lot of things, right? And that difference should be left up to you. I should be able to, you know, I should be able to hire someone that doesn't have a license to handle my leasing contract versus, you know, if I'm, you know, being accused of a criminal act and I want the best, you know, I want Mark Garagos to be my attorney, that should be up to me.
Well, and that's where I'm going to push back on you a little bit. I agree with everything you said, but I think the way you shaded it sort of misses the point a little bit. And this is a point, and I hate to, again, go to the Randian well twice when we're growing here, but whatever, I'm not going to hide my influences here. What is the biggest minority, according to Ayn Rand, the most oppressed minority? The individual. Yes? So... isn't the point she's making, the point the Founding Fathers made, that the idea is that the bigger government is, the more marginalized the individual becomes? Yeah. And whether we're talking about the individual's opportunity to become a lawyer, and as you pointed out, ironically, that is in line with all of the DEI stuff, that they're saying, oh, hey, look at how the system is set up to oppress minorities. Well, isn't that what we were trying to fix in the beginning?
Yeah.
Right. And didn't even Thomas Jefferson say, hey, we ended oppression. Now another generation has to end slavery. I'm not going to get into the is that a cop out on Jefferson's part? But, you know, creating a new revolutionary style of government in the history of humanity is kind of a big deal. Anyway, the point being, you're pointing out that this also marginalizes the individual's choice as to who they want to hire as a lawyer.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. If I'm going to small claims court, do I want to pay $1,000 an hour for my attorney? I mean, isn't it the same thing? Like sometimes when your phone screen breaks, you just go to the little kiosk at the mall. Other times you go to the Apple store and get a new phone. Don't you have a right of the choice as that as a consumer? Shouldn't the same thing apply to law?
Yeah, I think so. It's going to be interesting. Do you think this is going to stay? Like, because that's the other thing. Because this is such bad reasoning, are we going to get into another Roe versus Wade situation where it's like, okay, we have the right decision, but the wrong justification?
I mean, that's the thing. I really don't like how all of these articles are saying Supreme Court approves. Every article you Google says Supreme Court, but it's not the United States Supreme Court. It's the Washington State Supreme Court. So I assume... somebody is going
don't
to
have a good record
this.
Right now. Yeah.
Yeah. I assume somebody's going to challenge this and it's going to go to the Supreme Court. It has to be. Yes.
I would assume so.
So we'll see what happens. But what's interesting is, we're starting to talk about these things. I guess, of course, maybe that makes sense. As I've said before, we're in this time where we have to redo everything, right? We can't just take what was
we must
before.
Tear down the patriarchy. I mean the systemic oppression, whatever the flavor of the week is.
Right. We have to tear down everything and rebuild it. Everything has to be new. And as I've said before, remember, William, I talked about how social justice is accidentally backing into individualism because it's always who's the most marginalized. And
well,
if you're
it's
having
their contradictory beliefs are going to eventually lead them to accidentally advocate for something proper every once in a while.
Right. And it comes from the idea that the way to be more and more marginalized is to have more and more specific traits. And the most specific traits is that of an individual. So they're backing into individualism. All right. Speaking of the system and government making things worse, we've been tracking education since I've become a public school teacher. And this story I found, William, is one in which everybody is wrong, and that's why this is farce to me, okay? So, the headline is, Father arrested after continuously calling school about child's homework, police say. Adam Sizemore is accused of repeatedly calling his child's school to complain about the amount of homework, according to police in Oxford, Ohio. Criminal complaints filed against Sizemore claim he threatened the school principal, saying he, quote, better put his big boy pants on. William,
that's
is that a threat? Yeah. Like, is that assuming you can only fight someone in big boy pants? Because as a wrestling coach, we don't have big boy pants on when we fight.
Singlets usually, right? Yeah.
Yeah, but those aren't pants, and no one would call them big boy pants. I mean, I'm being a little tongue-in-cheek here, but that's not, like, if you're going to threaten somebody, like, I don't understand people. If I'm going to threaten somebody to be legally responsible, like, I'm going to actually threaten them, like, I'm going to chop you into pieces and feed you to your dogs. Something like that. You know what I mean? Like, you better put your big boy pants on. Did you get what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, man.
When the school stopped and... Good.
I was going to say, is this like the time where someone's coffee was too hot, so they called the police?
When the school stopped answering Sizemore's call, the Texas says he started calling their police department. I mean... I guess the school, like, achieved their purpose, right? He calls dispatch, I think it was 18 times roughly, said Oxford Police Detective Sergeant Adam Price. By the way, at which point are you like, you know what would be a good idea in my life? To call the police department 18 times. Like, talk about pure emotionalism. In the audio records from the police department, Sizemore can be heard becoming frustrated that dispatchers are not telling him their names. He was audibly frustrated that he kept getting the chief of police voicemail and that he couldn't speak with him directly. It's interesting that whoever wrote this article let the word can't in instead of couldn't. He can come to my effing house. I pay for him. He can come to my house. See, that's better, right? If you're going to threaten somebody, be like, he can come to my effing house. I pay for him. All right. Sizemore was heard saying in a transcript of one of the calls. That ultimately ended when he took him into custody for telecommunications harassment as well as a menacing charge, Price explained.
So they came to his house.
Be careful what you wish for. Sizemore was charged with 2 first-degree misdemeanors for telecommunications harassment, according to the criminal complaint. The menacing charge he faces is a 4th-degree misdemeanor, the complaint also shows. William, here's my thing about this. One... He is right that he does pay for the school and the police. And it is supposed to be, as Abraham Lincoln said, government for the people, by the people. But 2, people are not realizing that when we hand over our tax dollars, we lose our say in how things are run. So even though he pays for it, which he does, and we all do, he doesn't actually have say in the short term in how the schools are run. And also, that transitions into my final point. It is ridiculous that these kids don't do any homework, and then parents complain when they actually get homework.
Yeah. I also wonder how well was this person educated if they think that they call the police if they have a problem with the school. Shouldn't you call the superintendent? Where's Super Nintendo Chalmers?
Well, I mean, isn't that an indictment of the education system itself? And that's why I'm saying everybody is wrong
in
this
school. Yeah, everyone is wrong in this situation.
There is nothing correct about this situation. The only person I have any empathy for is Detective Sergeant Adam Price because he's probably just trying to do his job.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So that just shows you how bad it is. And that's what I wanted to point out to people. This is how ridiculous the education system has gotten. Speaking of which, transitioning into more, this is where the episode title is referenced. And first of all, the article that everyone was quoting was from the Daily Mail. So I tried to use the Daily Mail. William, Daily Mail articles are unreadable, right? Am I the only one?
Yeah, I have to switch to the reader view in my Safari in order to even find the text.
Okay, I don't even mean visually, though. I mean, when you find the text, it's so disorganized and out of order. It's like they intentionally make it out of order in order to make it longer to keep you on there longer so they can sell ads by saying people are on our site for longer.
We're both saying the same thing. It's because of all the ads and all the inserts and We are saying the same thing. You're just looking at the text itself, and I'm saying it's all the way up to the layout.
Well, because you're a technology guy, right? You work on the back end of technology.
Yeah. I look at the layout first before I can even get to the text. You're right.
Right. So this is the story that's been going around about that fight video about students in St. Louis at Hazelwood East High School, where a student, and I'm not even sure of her name, not that I think it matters, fought another student, Kaylee Gain. And Kaylee Gain, I don't know her status currently, but in the video, she had her head smashed against the pavement, the back of her head. So the girl was on top of her, shaking her, and her head kept hitting the sidewalk. And I know she was in the hospital with a fractured skull. I have heard different things from different people in regards to her status. So I don't know if that girl is still alive or not. I hope she is. But the interesting thing here is, again, the two sides. So one, Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey said this was a result of radical DEI policies and a soft-touch approach to justice. And the family has posted a GoFundMe, which has since been taken down. The fundraiser said the teen was unfairly painted as a bully and that she is the victim in a complicated situation. They were trying to get money for her legal defense. So, William.
We've seen this before, didn't we? Hold on. I'm going to ask you a question first. Didn't we see this before with Kyle Rittenhouse?
Explain.
Well, Kyle Rittenhouse tried to raise funds for his legal defense, and they kicked him off of all the fundraising platforms as well.
Right. So I guess the hero here is GoFundMe, or at least not the hero, but like the one consistent party is GoFundMe.
Yeah.
Where they said, I can confirm the fundraiser was removed and all donations have been refunded. GoFundMe's terms of service explicitly prohibit fundraising for the legal defense of an alleged violent crime, which is the Kyle Rittenhouse thing. So GoFundMe is at least agnostic and applying their principles consistently.
So I think that was a post-Rittenhouse policy that they wrote. But
But there are racial matters involved here. Right,
yeah.
The girl who is being accused and is the one who hurt Kaylee Gain is a minority, so they very easily could have caved to pressure and let that happen, because I'm sure
there are
many people who believe she is the victim. So I don't want to like praise GoFundMe and call them a hero like I was doing facetiously, but hey, at least they're consistent. The other two sides, though, right? Like, who do you want to talk about first? You want to talk about the family, or do you want to talk about the Missouri Attorney General?
Well, let's talk about the family first. I think that's important context.
Okay. Well, with the family, the question I have for you is, how much of this is just pragmatism? And what I mean by this is, I think they certainly can't afford to pay for the legal defense that's going to happen, and then they're going to be stuck with a public defender. Now we actually ironically return to our article about the bar exam and certain people being marginalized because of licensures. This would be an example of that. So they're trying to raise money for it. And rhetorically, isn't the best way to just try and paint yourself as the good guy, not say we deserve fair due process. Say, hey, we're actually the good guys here and we need the help. No, you could very well take the direction of, this is a kid, this is tragic, but we want to make sure things are handled properly, not, you know, a witch hunt occur. There are any number of angles they could take, but they took this angle. So my question is, do they legitimately believe this? Or is it, this is just pragmatic? Or is it probably option C? I'm going to guess you're going to say false dichotomy, where they actually believe their
bro.
Own. Right. False dichotomy, and they actually believe their own rhetoric.
I think that this connects with connects with the father story, because I think this is an example of the education system working as designed. They're using the DEI arguments, right? They've been taught this.
Yes.
This is the second generation now being taught it, right? And so you're supposed to paint yourself the victim, make your victimhood status gives you virtue, and that virtue, that quote-unquote virtue, is why people should support you, right?
Fair, fair. I think that's probably the best way of putting it, where they're not even thinking about it beyond the surface level there. They don't understand the implications or anything of that nature. Yeah. Well, perhaps we could say the same thing about the Missouri Attorney General, because isn't the whole thing with the right nowadays, and I'm assuming based upon his response that he is a Republican or a conservative, isn't that the same thing as Trump stoked that fire and that surface level return victimhood thinking on the right, and where he says it's a result of radical DEI policies and a soft touch approach to justice? That isn't he just going the anti-woke route? Isn't this a much deeper cultural issue stemming all the way down to collectivism and emotionalism rather than, now don't get me wrong, I think the radical DEI policies and the soft touch approach to justice are related to emotionalism and collectivism, but isn't it deeper than those two things?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that the Republicans have latched on to the DEI thing, right? It's something that is getting their base riled up. So it's more of a target of opportunity here, right? I don't know if this fight is directly related to that. I mean, goddamn, like teenage girls, they'll fight over the weirdest things, right? Like it would take probably a novel to understand the motivations in most cases.
Oh, I mean, that can be as simple as, and this is something, I don't know if I've expressed it on the show or not, with the new law in Florida about you're not allowed to have cell phones in class. And the school I'm at making it so you're not supposed to have cell phones out all day. Fights have gone down tremendously. The amount of fights have gone down tremendously because they would fight over someone posted a Instagram live about them, and then they'd find each other and fight over that. And, you know, if you watch the video, it's the typical fighting where, William, this to me is a tragic accident. And what I mean by that is obviously the girl shouldn't have been fighting to begin with, right? As a wrestling coach, I will say that, like, you shouldn't be fighting to harm other people, and, you know, you shouldn't be initiating force. However, if this fight had occurred on soft grass, do you think Kaylee Gain would have been in the hospital? I don't. No. I think the girl just shook her a couple times, and it was unfortunate that she hit her head on hard concrete. These kids, when you see these videos of quote-unquote fighting, they don't know how to fight. I have never seen, like, I don't want to see them, but sometimes kids shove the phones in my face. They, not this year, because they don't have their phones out, and if they did, I'd say, put your phone away. But last school year, when they took the phones out, and I told them put it away, and there were no repercussions to them having the phones out, they would show me the videos, and these kids don't know how to fight. And that's what I would say to them. I go, I'm a wrestling coach, and you're showing me a video of, I'm a girls wrestling coach, and you're showing me a video of two girls rolling around on the ground, kind of pulling each other's hair. And you think I have any interest in seeing this?
Yeah. I'm trying to think back. I know I'm an old man at this point, right? I should have a rocking chair here in my corner office. But Justin, I remember two, and I would say a half, legitimate like fights in our high school, my 4 years of high school. There were a lot of like tussles. And there's a difference there. You know, when guys fight, sometimes after the first punch is over, right? You know, there's posturing, there's aggression, someone punches, and then the fight's over, right? But only actual real, what I would consider like street fight style, there was only two, and I say a half, because the half was the first move was the guy's head got bashed into the lockers, and everyone stopped the fight, right? And that's the other thing. Everyone would stop the fight if it got too serious, right? Does that make me an old man?
I think it does.
There was kind of a bro code about the fights, right? It's like, cause damage, black eye, you know, but no broken bones, no a blunt force trauma to the head. Right, as soon as the kid, everyone hated the kid whose head got smashed in the locker. But as soon as that happened, everyone jumped on the guy, not the guy who got his head bashed in the locker. The other guy.
Well, because to a certain extent, people had, and this is another thing we didn't, I didn't mention when I talked about, you know, collectivism and emotionalism, is we didn't have the narcissism we have now. Where,
yeah, no one pulled out their phones.
Fights,
yeah. Not that
right.
We had phones.
Well, yes,
yeah.
No one pulled out their phones to film them. That's the first thing. I didn't even think of that. But I just meant people were aware of the long-term consequences of the fighting. And there's a difference between, you know, high schoolers knowing, I'm mad and I want to take out this aggression, and I'm mad and I don't care what happens to the other person.
Yeah. I don't know.
So, yeah, much more complicated issue than it's made out to be. And I think a lot to reflect on this week with the farce. And I think with the narcissism, William, you were asking last episode where we're going to go from here, sort of conversationally.
Yeah.
And I will give credit to Adam Carolla and Dr. Drew for being sort of ahead of the curve with this, which they usually are. I think the question is, what's the antidote to narcissism? I think that's the conversation, is how do we beat back this tide of narcissism in our culture? Because I think that's going to be the lasting effect of all of this quote-unquote woke social justice.
Yeah, how do you cut off the narcissistic supply for these folks? Yeah, and how, for some folks, they're too far gone, right? They're never going to get out of this narcissism cycle.
Well, that's what I mean. My experience is the kids with the most problems are the kids with the most narcissistic parents, and I try and help the kids learn not to be narcissistic themselves. And there are people who even argue that narcissism has been present in parenting for generations. I mean, look at Adam Carolla's parents, Adam Carolla's mom, right? Actually, both his parents.
Crazy.
He tells them all the time. And at the risk of my parents not listening to the show, because, I mean, an example is I made a bet with my wife early on when we were dating that if I sent it to my dad, he wouldn't listen to it. And I got the La La Land Funko Pop because of that, because she didn't believe me. So I can say what I'm about to say. And what I just said is an example of that. I mean, I would say there are elements of my own parents being narcissistic in their way. So
yeah.
How do we stem this tide back when it's been going on for so long? And where is the line between individualism and narcissism? And dare I say, where is the line between selfishness and narcissism? And those words being used interchangeably in our society?
Well, we've talked about it before. The setting boundaries is the issue, right? We don't teach people to psychologically set boundaries, right? And in fact, a lot of socializing early in elementary school is around breaking down boundaries and being boundaryless in it, like whether on purpose or inadvertently, instead of giving people tools to actually set boundaries. Play with that kid that you don't like, right? Why? You know, like, it's not given a good reason. And I think we can trace things back to that, because what's environment do we set up for in elementary school? An environment where the narcissist can thrive. And that sort of feeds a vicious cycle.
Well, and perhaps that is the real motifs that should have been occurring in all of these high school movies all these years, where they talk about the alphas and the betas, you know, back to the 80s, talk about the Karate Kid and Johnny Lawrence versus Daniel LaRusso. And then we look at, you know, Cobra Kai now, and Cobra Kai kind of blew that up and showed that the way they portrayed it back then wasn't accurate, because Johnny wasn't the narcissist. Who was the narcissist? Wasn't it his teacher in Cobra Kai?
Yeah. Yep.
Right. So I'm going to set a boundary right now, and as I've already started to do, we're going to talk about some more movies in The Hopeful Bromantic with JML. Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. I need a rerun to better cast the next series of events. In the air timeline lapse, my made-for-TV As always, if you'd like to continue the conversation with us during the week, you can do so by joining our Discord channel. If you were just listening to the show and screaming, Sensei Kreese is his name, because I momentarily forgot. Look, I wasn't a fan of The Karate Kid. I'm a fan of Cobra Kai for the reasons I listed. If you want to continue conversations on that topic and others, and you want to share some farce with us during the week, just go to midside.com or themidside.com/podcast, click on any episode link, and in there is the Discord join link. You can even watch the trailers for Trailer Takedown, which we're going to talk about in a minute. Only three trailers this week. But first, I would like to review Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Before I do, as always, like I do, William, are you a fan of the Ghostbusters franchise? Did you see Ghostbusters Afterlife? Give the listeners a brief summary of your Ghostbusters experience and fandom.
I love the first Ghostbusters. The second one's all right. I enjoyed it. I did not watch the stupid all-female cast one at all.
We don't acknowledge that one.
Yeah. The other one has been in my watch queue for a while, and I started to watch it, and I liked it, but I got pulled into other things. So I still have not completed the other one of this modern sort of take. But I am... This one showed up as... You know, I saw that it was in theaters. I was like, oh, I put it back in my queue. So it is in my queue to watch this weekend. The Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Well, if any Midsiders have been with us for 3 years, they'll remember I was a huge fan of Ghostbusters Afterlife. I rewatched it this week. It's a tremendous movie. The way it handles the death of Harold Ramis, Egon, who was one of the writers of the original movie, and works it into the plot and mythology of the Ghostbusters franchise and makes it a reboot, is so tremendously done. It's such a great meditation on all the nostalgia that's going on. And as I pointed out at the time, as a way to build on the culture that already existed and the systems and advancements that were made without destroying what came before, is tremendous. So I was a huge fan of Ghostbusters Afterlife. I also, you know, look, I don't know if you remember this, I was a huge fan of Ghostbusters growing up. The cartoon, the movies.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about the cartoon. I loved the cartoon growing up.
Yeah, the real Ghostbusters. I may have even watched the other Ghostbusters a little bit. What was it? The Extreme Ghostbusters or whatever. Mm-hmm. The guy with the ape and the guy in the wheelchair. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the knockoff. But I even, before I collected Funko Pops like I do nowadays, way back in the day when I was a kid, I collected Ghostbusters action figures. I had the Firehouse. I had the Ecto-1. I had it all. And then my parents made me give it away to my next door neighbor because they decided I was too old for it in like third grade.
Damn.
Yeah. So I'm a big Ghostbusters fan. However, I am not as big of a fan of Ghostbusters Frozen Empire as I am Ghostbusters Afterlife. Now, Ghostbusters Afterlife was written and directed by Jason Reitman, who is the son of Ivan Reitman, the director of the original Ghostbusters, who has died in the time between, and that's actually the really interesting thing about all this, in the time between Afterlife and Frozen Empire. And interestingly enough, in the scenes where Egon's ghost appears in Afterlife, that is portrayed by Ivan Reitman in prosthetics. So it's really, really interesting that it was done in that way, especially because the whole movie is about Egon as a father figure as to both his daughter and his granddaughter. So it's interesting that the director's father played that, especially because at the end of Ghostbusters Afterlife, it says for Harold, and at the end of Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, it says for Ivan. So I hope nobody else dies before they make the next one and they have to do that. But that's an interesting trend that's happening. And it kind of fits with the idea of Ghostbusters and the afterlife and how we deal with the spirits and the supernatural and dying and all of these things. Now, why am I sort of less excited? I'm interested, William, and how you are going to respond to my one sentence review on Letterboxd.
All right.
Because of the rhetoric I'm using here. I want you to remember, though, my opinion on the franchise I am going to reference and my opinion on this movie and the franchise I'm going to reference. Okay? The Ghostbusters franchise gets its Force Awakens. That is my one sentence review.
Whoa. Okay.
Okay. How are you taking that?
So Force Awakens was a cheap knockoff of the first movie. So that sounds like a pretty negative review. That you're very afraid that we're going to have Rian Johnson going to be the director of the next Ghostbusters movie or something? Do you have some advance notification?
So, no, I can't extrapolate out words from there, right? Oh. I don't think we're going to know what's going to happen there ideologically or creatively as far as that goes. However, I do agree with what you said in your characterization of The Force Awakens. I do think that applies to this movie. I will say this about this movie. Remember how when I reviewed Wonka, I said it relied on the original movie and that when you got to the end and the Pure Imagination song played, you couldn't not feel something?
Right.
It's the same thing here, dude. The Ghostbusters theme song is iconic. I don't care. That is one of the best written songs in American movie history. And this movie, like The Force Awakens, follows all of the same beats. It's a new cast with the old cast mixed in following the same beats. If somebody told me they were going to do a Ghostbusters reboot, this is what I would have thought the first movie would be, not Ghostbusters Afterlife. In a way, this movie existing shows how much better Afterlife is and how much we should appreciate Afterlife for being able to exist. Because they could have jumped right to this. Especially because the opening scene of this movie is an exposition dump of Ghostbusters Afterlife. Because clearly, like a television show, they're worried about...
Last time on Ghostbusters!
Well, not even that. Do you remember back in the day when you came back from a commercial and a character had to say a line to remind people of what happened right before the commercial?
Yeah.
Because they were worried about viewers tuning over and not knowing what happened before the commercial? It's the same thing here, where it was the mom, Paul Rudd's character, who's her boyfriend, her live-in boyfriend now, they're all living in the firehouse, and her two kids going somewhere. Actually, they're in the middle of chasing a ghost in the Ecto-1, and they're all saying things about what happened in the first movie. So like McKenna Grace's character, the granddaughter, who's really the central character in these movies, and as she should be, she's a great character, makes a joke because she's sort of like coded as autistic. And in the first movie, she made jokes to deal with her social anxiety, but she doesn't make a joke for the rest of the movie. And there's no reason for her to be making a joke in the scene beyond we need to play on what came before. And likewise, when other characters are brought into this movie, they feel as if they're shoehorned in. Now, I'm not sure if that's the writing or the editing. Like when Peter Venkman, Bill Murray shows up, he just is interviewing Kumail Nanjiani's character. No one was like, oh, we should get Ray to, or we should get, no, sorry, Peter. We should get Peter to interview Kumail Nanjiani's character. It's just he is at one point. And then he shows up at the end too. He knocks on the firehouse doors before the climactic battle. And he's like, no one told me we were doing this. Can I help? So a lot of it feels shoehorned in. But it's all in, you know how we talked a lot about with The Force Awakens, the idea of epics and retelling the same story.
And
we thought that's what they were doing. Yeah, and sagas. Yeah. It's very much like that. This family shows up, they take over the firehouse, the government is against them. The mayor's against them, played by the same guy, William Atherton. And then by the end of the movie, they've succeeded so well in their private business empire that the city supports them and the government has to back off. So Rian Johnson was clearly going with a very social justice, I would even say communist message.
Right.
I don't think this franchise is going to contradict...
Turn that direction?
Right, yeah. The core libertarian values of the original Ghostbusters movies, because Jason Reitman is a self-described libertarian. Mm-hmm. There was one dig in there where the containment unit wasn't... It was filled up, and people were like... One of the kids was like, well, didn't they think about when it would be filled up eventually? And somebody was like, it was the 80s, nobody thought about the future, which is just patently false. But this is the year 2024. It's 40 years later from the 80s. It's not that nobody thought about it. It's just that nobody kept the Ghostbusters going, so there was nobody in the interim to improve upon what was done. If you can make a device that lasts for 40 years, then it's up to somebody else to innovate within your business since then. It's just the Ghostbusters died between then. So that dig was a little bit of a leftist dig, but an environmentalist dig. But overall, I don't think they're going to go in the Rian Johnson's direction. It's just that this movie felt very paint by the numbers. Does that make sense? Yep. It is a Ghostbusters money.
Money.
Movie. Yeah, they're pretty money, right? It is funny. There are a lot of moments I laughed at. Kumail Nanjiani is as funny as I've ever seen him. He's a great actor. He's very funny. He's great in this movie. Hold on, I have to cough. Sorry, excuse me. He is great in this movie. Everybody is great in this movie, especially the further it goes. But it just was, if you told me how would they have to do a Ghostbusters movie, this is how they would have to do it. So it's nothing original. It's nothing novel. You're not getting anything great. It's just a Ghostbusters movie. Whereas Afterlife set my expectations very high. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So in fact, I will push back on your Last Jedi question a little bit. If this is a three movie saga, the first movie far outpaced, Afterlife far outpaced The Force Awakens, and this blows The Last Jedi out of the water for very, very many reasons I don't want to get into right now.
Yeah.
Still, overall, as a movie on its own, I give this a solid bro rating, right? This is 3 out of 5 stars. Not tremendous, not terrible. It's enjoyable. It's the Ghostbusters. You're going to get Paul Rudd. You're going to get Kumail Nanjiani. You're going to get 3 out of the 4 original Ghostbusters. You're going to get that anti-government message, which you can't say about like any other movie in any other franchise. So I would recommend seeing this. It's honestly probably the best movie I've seen so far this year, but that is not saying much. I looked back in my letterbox all the way back to 2021. There have been a lot of good movies over the last few years. This year, though, very, very disappointing at the box office so far. Nothing great in movies in the theaters so far.
Yeah, just Dune 2, but I know that you have your objections to that. But Justin,
I don't object to the movie. I don't like the director, so I'm not going to see it because I know I will not like it.
Yep, I understand. Speaking of another thing you won't like, I watched X-Men 97. Have you heard about this?
Yeah, I did too. I didn't want to talk about that. If you want to talk about how the second episode means they stop an insurrection... Is that what you're going to bring up?
Yeah, they stop an insurrection. Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. Just briefly on that, I think they did all right. The animation is obviously different, but the voice actors are pretty good. The characters seem like the actual X-Men characters, which was surprising in a good way. The episodes feel a lot like a 90s episode, although there's some 90s, some references that aren't really, they're maybe a little try hard or miss the mark on the 90s. Sort of look and feel, and I don't know, it was enjoyable. Justin, I know it's probably nostalgia bait and it could go downhill from here, but I thought it was probably some of the best animated reboot we've seen this year. So
I enjoyed it. I didn't enjoy how they backgrounded Gambit. I'm not really sure they know what to do with him because his character type can't really exist nowadays, right? Like
he's getting cuckolded right there,
House.
At the end, isn't he?
Right. So maybe that's where his plot's going to be, where he stands up for himself. I don't know. I mean,
I know this might be spoilers, but
there's walkers in the barn and Lori's pregnant.
Aren't we getting a Phoenix vibe there at the end of the second episode?
They bring the Phoenix back because the Phoenix storyline was done in the original series, and if this is supposed to be a continuation, they would just repeat the same storyline?
I don't know.
I mean, I assume the Magneto Rogue romance comes from the comics. Am I wrong?
It does, yeah. Yep.
Okay, so it's not out of nowhere.
We don't know. In the TV show's universe, we don't know the her history, other than she was really bad. Or not really bad, but you know what I mean? Like, she has a very troubled past.
Yeah. Also, there's some troubling signs of the Morph and Wolverine relationship, in the sense of they were friends in the original series. Now, I don't remember. I remember Morph died in the first couple episodes, and that was a big deal, and Wolverine was really upset about it. But did Morph come back to life in the original series?
It's been so long since I remember all the details of the plot, but Morph is an original character, I think, to the TV show, I'm pretty sure. So he did, yeah, I don't remember how he came back. I'll have to look it up, because I don't remember. It's not like I rewatched the original series, right, before this came out, so. But
it's very concerning that they could do some sort of a sexualized relationship between Wolverine and Morph, whereas Morph's voice is obviously male, but it could be very easy for him to morph into a female body, and then they turn him into essentially a genderless trans character. Right. I could see them going in that direction with that. And the vibe I got, William, from the second episode, and I want to be clear, I enjoyed it, right?
Yeah,
I enjoyed watching both of them. However, the vibe I got was the Star Trek Discovery premiere and pilot, where it was so obviously a metaphor for Trump that I just stopped watching the series.
Yeah.
I have so much nostalgia and love for this version of Gambit. This is what got me into Gambit. That I'm going to watch the next one, but the insurrection thing, and I only say it because they said the word, I was going to let it go and not even think about it until they literally said the word insurrection.
Yeah.
Do you remember they said that word in the show?
Yeah.
So they were clearly trying to code it for the insurrection. And the problem with that is that was not an insurrection on January 6th. It wasn't. That is the rhetoric the left is trying to convince us of.
Yeah, I sort of took it as, I mean, I understand why you take it that way, but I guess for me it was like, oh, this is an insurrection. They're showing us what an actual insurrection looks like, you know, with weapons and a sniper and like all this other stuff. So I understand what you're saying, but I think they inadvertently disproved that point, if that was their point. But I have another question for you, Justin.
Well, you're hold on. Before you ask that question, okay, I want to push back on that a little bit. The concern I have is the following. X-Men has always been especially the cartoon, has always been about oppressing a collective group unfairly.
Yeah.
My concern is it's very easy to conflate that with social justice nowadays.
It is, yeah.
And that's where I would be concerned where they would go. That's why I'm reading it in the way I'm reading it.
Yeah, makes sense. But I was going to say, as a Gambit fan, there was a more egregious issue. Canon issue, I would say, with Gambit. Did we see him charge up Wolverine's claws? Wouldn't that make Wolverine explode?
Yes. I'm assuming that's not possible. Right. But I'm assuming the reason it didn't, it was because it was like adamantium. Do you get what I'm saying? Like,
maybe.
The adamantium can handle it. That's what I'm assuming. Or maybe Wolverine's healing factor. I don't know. I saw that and I was like, well, at least they tried to do something innovative with the two coolest characters.
Soon as I saw that, that kicked me out for a second. I was like, wait, that would make Wolverine explode. How did he charge only the adamantium? And he has adamantium in his bones. All of his bones will explode.
This is how you can know I wasn't a comic book nerd as much as I was a sci-fi nerd. Because I was just like, I had my Zack Snyder cool moment. Or I was like, oh, that's cool. Well, that was a good idea. We gave the two coolest characters a team-up move. Man, I hope we see more of Wolverine and Gambit teaming up.
There were lots of good team-up moves. So if you're a fan of the original X-Men cartoon from the 90s, I think you will enjoy that. So that's my two-second review of that.
And I think you will enjoy it, but I am hesitant going into the next episode. I'm going to give them the chance, but we'll see where they go. I'm concerned.
Yeah, well, the showrunner got fired, so.
Yeah, but supposedly he already wrote the first two seasons. So.
Yeah, exactly.
And maybe you're right. Maybe they fired him because Disney's trying to clean that stuff up and appeal more to the general public. Bob Iger does seem to be changing the direction of things. However, as I've said for a long time, Bob Iger went to Ithaca College, so I don't think he is the answer. I think he is the cause to all these problems.
Amen.
Or one of the causes. All right, that's some stuff that came out. Let's talk about some stuff that's going to come out in Trailer Takedown. As always, I post the trailers in Discord the Saturday. I guess we record. I think we're going to record on Saturdays from now on. So you can watch the trailers when you want. Whenever you want. Do you want to watch them while you're listening to us record? Do you want to watch them before the episode, after the episode? You decide.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
Humane is I think it's a horror movie. Social satire. It seems to be based on the pandemic, where they take the concept of climate lockdowns we've been talking about, but they go even further, where they take, you know, remember Thanos in Endgame and Infinity War said he had to balance the universe by killing half the people? Well, they take it in that direction, and they say 20% of the world population has to die. So they're starting a policy where people can volunteer to be killed in order to save the world. Interestingly enough, I've always said the logical conclusion of many of collectivist policies are save the world, kill yourself. So it's interesting they're going that way. What I like about this is they're showing this as immoral, and they're showing this as the conflicts it causes. This focuses on one family. One of the cast members in it is Jay Baruchel. At the beginning of the trailer, I was very worried because usually Jay Baruchel, who has admitted to being a big Batman versus Superman fan, takes more individualistic or libertarian roles. So I was worried about that. But then I saw the rest of the trailer. Well, not the entire trailer. I will talk about that in a moment. And I was like, oh, now I understand why he took this role. There is a lot to like here. So much so, William, that they started doing what you complain about and showing the entire movie. And they got to the point that the family was there and one of them has to choose to die because two people volunteered and one ran away. And then they started going into the conflicts and how each character was dealing with it. And I stopped watching the trailer because I did not want anything spoiled for me. That's how much I liked this trailer. I am very excited about this movie. Hug.
Yeah, I feel like I've already watched the movie, Justin, because I watched the whole trailer. And that was going to be my biggest complaint about this trailer is it gives too much away. What are we doing? Like, we're swinging wildly on some of these trailers the last couple of shows of either giving away way too much or not giving any motivation at all, right?
I think it's showing random
action clips.
I think it's they don't know how to market in the TikTok age. We talked about this before, where trailers would show 5-second clips of the trailers, 10-second clips of the trailers before the trailer starts. And we were talking about why that was done. And if you watch like reality shows now, they show at the beginning of the season and the episodes, clip shows of what's going to happen in the season and in the episodes. And I asked kids, and they said they want to see that so they know whether they want to watch the whole thing or not.
Dude, there was a clip going around YouTube, a TikTok clip, of some chick complaining that romance novels should say whether it's a love triangle or basically giving away the plot at the beginning of the book, like somehow like a introduction page, so she would know whether she would like it or not. And this is exactly what you're talking about. They want to see.
What's the narcissism? They want to be it designed for exactly what they want. Nobody wants to take the risk of reading something or watching something and not enjoying it.
Or it not being exactly what they want, expected. Right.
It's
the McDonald's-fication of
Right.
Of, right. It's like, well, I want chicken nuggets. Only give me chicken nuggets. Right.
Right. Well, the, as I say, McDonald's and Netflix, the algorithm feeds you exactly what you want to keep you in there, which doesn't allow you to be innovative.
It's not
explore.
Even exactly what you want. It's exactly what you've seen before. That's the part that bothers me. Right.
Right.
I don't want to see just the same story over and over again, just in a different color.
Yeah.
I guess I'm going to say I'm going to hug it.
Netflix and hug. Second trailer.
Alien Romulus, while we're speaking about the same story we've seen before, there is nothing in this trailer that seems like something different. Maybe this is the Alien franchise's Force Awakens. There's a spaceship. There's a bunch of teenagers on it. The aliens are on it. The teenagers are being hunted by the aliens. This is exactly what you would think a complete straight horror version of the movie Alien would be. At least that's what the trailer gives me. I'm not a big enough fan of the franchise to begin with. Tackle.
I was thinking while watching this, this would be good if like this was like a new medium, right? Like if someone was like, I'm going to remake exactly Alien and we're going to do it in VR or something, right? But we're literally doing it in the exact same medium with no changes, at least from the trailer. Why? I can just watch the original. I don't get this.
And
again,
why, William,
who is this
would
for?
A sci-fi franchise, and I say this to you as a Star Trek fan, use the word Romulus in your movie?
I don't know. Tackle.
Final trailer.
Beetlejuice. We have to distinguish between... I stopped before I said one more, right? Don't want to summon
exactly.
him.
No.
By the way, that was one of the funniest jokes in Community, where at three separate times the name Beetlejuice was said throughout this first season, and then somebody dressed like Beetlejuice walked by. Anyway, with this teaser, we have to distinguish between the teaser itself and the movie and the franchise. And what I mean by this is, the teaser itself did one thing for me, William. It made Michael Keaton seem old.
Oh my God, yes.
When he came out and he said, the juice is loose, baby, like, I would have expected Beetlejuice to say that with like a lot more energy and excitement, but he sounded like a bored old man. And then when they showed him at the end, like the close-up of his face, I was like, he looks fucking old. Now, I really enjoy... I mean, I think everyone... Have you ever met someone who didn't like the first Beetlejuice?
I don't know.
But I really liked the first Beetlejuice. I was going to see... I didn't need to see a trailer. I was going to see the new Beetlejuice regardless. This trailer did nothing to dissuade me from seeing the new Beetlejuice. So I guess it succeeded in that way. If you are assuming the first movie was so popular that you just need to not alienate audiences, this is a successful teaser. However, it does nothing to win over new audiences. So I would say the teaser itself is very, I don't know, just like average. However, this movie is a hug.
Hug.
Yeah, I wonder what sort of tax problems he's in if we're bringing him back for all sorts of things. That being said, I'm going to watch this. This looks interesting. It's a universe that I miss, but I don't know. You worry with the, as I always say with these kinds of movies, I'm not going to risk going to the theater for it with all of the how movies are made currently. At least the trailer gives me hope that it won't be stupid and shit on everything from the last movie, what made the last movie fun. But I mean, we have to be staring at an old man the whole time. If that's going to be his energetic performance, it might not be good. So I think by definition, this is a
Netflix and hug.
All right, William, that brings us to the end of our journey into the midside. What did we learn this trip?
That I look way younger than Beetlejuice. Justin, what did you learn this trip?
I don't know, because now I'm very confused. Did you not always look way younger than Beetlejuice?
Maybe.
I don't know. I just feel like that's something you didn't need to learn. I learned that I think we need to focus more on how to deal with the narcissism problem. I think that's what I'm going to be thinking about going forward, is how do we deal with the narcissism problem, both on a interpersonal individual level and on a collective cultural level. All right. I want to thank everybody for listening to the show. All 1,000 people listening to the show, and maybe more, because maybe it's like FDR's Fireside Chats. You're sitting around a computer listening to this stream on Spotify. So I appreciate it. Although it's not Spotify, it's Fountain. All our listeners are from Fountain. So thank you, Fountain. You are the head of our listening. See what I did there? If it wasn't for you, this would just be me talking in the corner of my closet like a crazy person. Of course, that's what it is. You just make me feel better about myself. If you'd like to support us, you can go to themidside.com/store, pick up a t-shirt. You can go to midside.com/thecut, pick up my novel, which is, I think it's as old as Ghostbusters Afterlife at this point. Maybe a few months younger. You can go to themidside.com/patreon and themidside.com/locals, and you can throw us some support that way. That is, of course, how we keep the lights on, pay our bills, keep the show going. We don't necessarily need to make money, but we would like to not lose money on this show. And as always, if you'd like to grow the show, we used to say tell a female friend because of Dr. Andy Bernstein. However, I think maybe if you want to grow the show, just post it on Fountain. That seems to be working. This concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin M. Wisniewski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Beetlejuice. Beetlejuice.
What if the Beetlejuice sequel is all just a plan to release a third movie called Beetlejuice, 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 and if enough people repeat the movie's name, he is actually summoned in real life?
Oh, that would be great.